I love the old hymns. They're amazing. You're actually sounding really good today. It's good actually standing near the front because you think you're a better singer than you are, because like all the good singers are behind you, and then, yeah, it's good. Really good. Hey, we're starting a new series today, and I'm really excited to be kicking it off. We're actually going to be camping for the next 7 weeks in the book of John, and we're going to be looking and reading from the first 11 chapters of John. And this is the title of the series. We're calling it Seven. And I guess the best place to start with in the book of John is in chapter 1. And I'm going to read to you. I've only got a few slides today, but we're going to do a bit of reading. So, if you haven't brought your Bible, or you don't have a Bible app, or you're scared that if you use your Bible app, it may become Facebook or Tinder, we have some Bibles we can hand out if you just want to get back to the good old paper, you know, the smell of, oh, that beautiful smell of paper. So if you do need a Bible, we've got the lovely Jen at the back with some Bibles. Put your hand up, she'll get a Bible to you. And if you're here at church for the first time and you're not sure where we're going to be in the Bible, I've even got the page number for you, page 499. If you open it up there, you'll be tracking with us. So it's great to have you here this morning. If you are a visitor or you're here or you're a seeker and you're just sussing out what this whole Jesus thing is, grab a Bible and feel free to, dare I say this, feel free to take it home. If you need one, if you haven't got a Bible, take it home. If you have got about 17 Bibles at home, feel free to bring them and just leave them lying around, or at least just bring one and read it. We're going to start off in John chapter 1. And kind of the idea of this series is going to be about looking at where God is at work amongst his people, where God is not just at work amongst his people, but at work amongst us, learning to spot where God's at work and maybe even sharing in that work with others. So we're going to read from John chapter 1, page 499, if you've got the U-Butte blue and white Bible. And it says here in John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. Verse 10. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. Who's John talking about, by the way? Yeah, you're in church. What's the answer? Wrong. No, you're right. That's good. Let's read that again. Verse 10. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a husband's will, but born of God. Verse 14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling amongst us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Verse 17, for the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. The whole motto of John is the Word became flesh. The God who created the heavens and the earth, who was there in the beginning, became flesh, became one of us. You can see this throughout the whole of John. And if you read John, at least the first 11 chapters as we go along in this next 7 weeks, you'll see that. You'll see that John's saying heaven and earth intersect in this person, Jesus. That's the message and the motto that permeates the whole of John. Heaven and earth intersects through this person, Jesus. But John, at the very beginning, and by the way, if you want to know what the book of John is about, just read the first chapter. John's really good because he's kind of like, hey, I'll let you know up front what the whole book is about. And you find that in this beautiful first chapter. But John says here, heaven and earth intersected in Jesus. But it says in verse 10, he was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. Can you believe that? Think about that for a moment. The one who made the world was amongst us, and we didn't recognize him. This is the whole point of John's gospel, is to let us know how to recognize Jesus, how to recognize God at work, because he's saying it's possible for us to miss the creator of this earth. It's possible to miss where heaven and earth intersect and God's will is being done. It's possible to actually miss it. I don't know about you, but that's scary. It also speaks to something of the humility of Christ, the humility of God, that we can miss him because he's not maybe showing up in ways or in places that we thought he would. Christmas is coming. We'll talk about the places we think God should show up, and he doesn't. I won't make a big deal about this last bit. Verse 17, it says, the law was given through Moses, and grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Just one of the interesting things in that is that, notice it didn't say that grace and truth came through the law. You know, often we've been trying to say as a community, as a church, you know, when we read our Bibles, we read it through the lens of Jesus, that what Jesus elevates and says, we read the Old Testament, we go, praise God, we can see Jesus in that. But what Jesus demotes and doesn't talk about, we say, well, that was their understanding, but Jesus has revealed something that is a lot clearer. And this is the whole point of John. He's saying, you know, Moses was like the law of Moses was like a school teacher that brought us to Christ. But grace and truth, if you see Jesus, if you don't miss him, you'll actually really know what it is for God to do for you, what you can't do for yourself, grace. And truth, you'll actually know what the Father is like, what his will is, and how you can enter in on it. So we're going to flip over and we're going to look at the first story today. And like any good story, there's a little prelude to the story of that's found on page 500, chapter 2. And it's about one of the first disciples. And one of the first disciples is a guy by the name of Nathanael. And Nathanael, it says in chapter 1, was approached by a really cool dude. His name was Philip. He was obviously a very, very brilliant guy with a name like that. But he came to Nathanael and he said, hey, Nathanael, I think we found the Messiah. Come with me. And at the time, Nathanael said, oh, yeah, where's he from? And he said, oh, he's from Jesus, who's from Nazareth, Jesus of Nazareth. Everyone who had a name in that day, the last name was usually where they're from or what they did. Jesus of Nazareth. And Nathanael said, can anything good come from Nazareth? Nazareth? He was from Cana, which is a stone's throw to the north of Nazareth. And Philip said, come and see. And as he walked to Jesus and approached Jesus, Jesus spotted Nathanael and said, here's a guy who in you is no guile. That's kind of the King James Version. When I first read the Bible, I read the King James Version. Someone who's a straight shooter, someone who tells the truth. True to form, Nathanael goes, how do you know? I love it. I mean, I would have probably gone, thanks, Jesus. You're so right. There's no guile in me. I like you. You've won me over. But Nathanael goes, how do you know? And Jesus says, before you met Philip, I saw you sitting under the tree. Nathanael is blown away. And he goes, whoa, yeah, that was like earlier on today. And you really are the Messiah. And then Jesus says this cryptic thing. And you got to understand that that John is wanting to give us signs and he's wanting to show us God at work, but Jesus says this as a reply, and it's cryptic until you understand John's whole motto, heaven meets earth and intersects, heaven and earth intersecting in Jesus. He says, I'll tell you the truth. Let me back up. Jesus said, verse 50, you believe because I told you, I saw you under the fig tree. He said, you shall see greater things than that. He then added, I tell you the truth, you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Now, if you maybe have read a bit of the Bible, you might pick up, and Jesus did this a lot. He would say something, and the rabbis did this a lot in the day. They would say something, but it was a direct reference to something else, usually an Old Testament passage. Remember when they said, you're not yet 40, Jesus, and Jesus said, how can you say this stuff? And Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. And they all got really upset. You know why they got upset? Because he was referencing to when Moses met God. And Moses said, who shall I say who sent me? And God said, say, I am sent you. So when Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am, they all were like, oh, this is one of those other passages where he's talking about the heavens opening and the angels ascending and descending and upon the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. Can anyone guess what that was from in the Old Testament, an Old Testament story? Hello? I can hear someone saying something. I'm a bit deaf. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Jacob's ladder. The story of Jacob found in Genesis 28. And in this story, Jacob is a bit of a deceiver, and he's running, and he's about to meet his brother, and he arrives at a place called Bethel. And he goes to sleep, and then he dreams about this ladder and angels ascending and descending. And in Genesis 28, page 14, no, I don't know. In Genesis 28, Jacob wakes up, and he says these profound saying, God was in this place, and I didn't even know it. See what John is doing? John's saying, you can miss God, but I want to show you some signs where God is at work so you cannot, so you don't have to miss Jesus. So you don't have to miss what God is doing in the world. So we get to the story. And John has a beautiful way of unpackaging these seven stories that we find in these 11 chapters. And the way he does it is by saying, I want to talk to you about signs. I want to talk to you about signs. And if you look in John, at the very end of John, he actually comes clean about his whole purpose of the book. And he says in John chapter 20 and verse 30, and in some Bibles it says, the purpose of John's gospel, he says this, Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these signs are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John's saying here, I want to tell you some stories, but they're not just stories. They're signs of where heaven intersects earth in Jesus Christ. It's how 2,000 years ago the world finished and a new world begun. And so we all know the purpose of a sign. Okay, I've got some signs here, so I'm just going to put them up. Purpose of a sign is literally to point to something else going on. And John says, these stories are how we don't miss God. I don't know about you, but if it's possible for us to be a community of faith and miss God, that scares me. And this very first story is like a clue, so we can become sensitized to not walking by, to not missing God at work in the world. and to not missing entering in as well. So let's get into the account, the story. With that framework in mind, it says here, on the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." This is probably at Nathanael's, where Nathanael lived, and here's this wedding. And I went to a wedding last night, and I had a lot of fun. And there was a tab at the bar, and I was talking to some of the young guys ahead of time. They had a plan about how they could run up the tab and get as much as they could early on. Don't judge them. They're young. They'll learn. Actually, it was quite ingenious. But anyway, wish I'd thought of it. When the tab runs out, the alcohol stops. Well, it doesn't stop. You just start paying for it, which makes you a bit more selective, I guess. But here's a wedding that Jesus and Mary and the disciples are invited to. Nathanael, who is one of those disciples. And halfway through, some point in the wedding, the wine runs out. And for us, that's no big deal, I guess. But for them, this was devastating. This was an incredible potential point of shame, embarrassment, even starting off the wedded, you know, the wedded life of the couple. They may have seen it as some sign of like bad luck, and so this was a big deal. And in one sense, as well, this is a picture of the Jewish people. They'd been waiting for God. They'd been saying, "God, is the marriage, the covenant that we have with you going to work?" And they find out that God is not a covenant breaker, but a covenant keeper. And it says, when the wine was gone, Jesus' mother, you know, only two times this is mentioned in John, is Mary's mentioned. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." Jesus said, "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied, "My time has not yet come." When I first read that, it can seem a bit kind of like rude, can't it? Like, hey, I'm not doing any miracles today. My time has not yet come. Like, you know, and kind of like, back off, woman. But John's specifically writing this because he wants us to understand that even though this is a sign, there's a time coming where Jesus will literally, on the cross, end the world and start a new world. That Jesus on the cross will literally turn shame into glory. That a suffering human being will actually somehow be God's victory over death and sin and destruction. And so he's saying, "My time is not coming." He's not just being rude and flippant to his mum. And that's why we've got the answer from Mary straight away that follows. But he's saying, it's like John saying, this is pointing to something yet to come. And this is how we don't miss God. But this is not it yet. Jesus is saying, there's something coming where you will see the glory of God. You'll see it today, but there's something where it's going to be so amazing, so wonderful. Mary replied, "Do whatever he tells you." And then nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. By the way, what I'm doing here is we always should read these passages in light of what it meant to the Jewish people. We can't just take them and go, "Well, Phil, tell me what it means for me," without first saying, what did it mean for them? Without first saying, what does this tell us about God who is at work for them? Then we're going to come to the bit where I'll say, possibly, could this be what it means for us? Is that okay? It's so important, because otherwise you end up with preaching that's like, I just sit down and I say, what would I like to talk about today? And then I just search on Bible Gateway for verses that back up what I want to say. And then I tell you a few stories in the middle, and you've got Self-Help by Phil Stevenson with some verses attached on. What we want to do is say, what is God doing in the world? What is God doing amongst the people of the time? How did it affect them? And then we can say, how does this affect us? How can we enter in? By the way, it has a lot to say to us today, 2,000 and a bit years later. So there's these ceremonial jars that they use for ceremonial washing. Has anyone ever seen people wash before prayer time? You know, just that observance is beautiful. But it's like John's saying here, God's doing something amongst the old Jewish system. It's something new. It's water that's going to become wine. We know Jesus wasn't a Swedish Viking with blonde hair, but he was a Jewish rabbi. We know that God's story, when we read the story from Genesis to Revelation, it starts in the beginning. It's not a science book, but it's a book that says, here's God. If you want to know more, read on. And we know it's a story where God moved towards a small people, not because they were the best, but because he chose them. And they were a Hebrew people who became the Jewish people. This is our story. We can't get away from it. And the moment we disconnect our story and make Jesus about just here and now is the moment we lose the story of what God's doing in the world. What's God's been doing since the beginning? And so Jesus says, hey, those pots there, they've got lots of water in. Grab them. Fill them with water. And I think John's saying something new is happening amongst the old Jewish tradition. And so they did, and he said, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. And they did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the wine. I don't know when it turned to wine, but I wish Jesus came to every wedding. It's amazing. And they get to the master, and the master says this. He says, everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. When I was growing up, like, because my mom and dad didn't want me to drink at all, which is probably good, I guess. I actually started quite young. Anyway, is there any kids in? Anyway, I forget I talked about that. It didn't work, but they would say, look, it wasn't alcoholic wine, it was grapefruit or something, and it was non-alcoholic schlur or whatever it was called. I think this reference here is like, hey, this is the really good stuff. Usually people are drunk by now and you bring the rubbish stuff out, but this is amazing. This is beautiful. Now, I think this talks about what God is doing amongst the people. He's saying, what you had was lovely and it was beautiful, but what I'm doing is amazing. But there's something he says, the man who tasted the wine, he says, after the guests have had too much to drink, he says, but you have saved the best till now, right now. Can you hear John almost like winking, pointing to these signs going, at least three of the stories John tells, people are actually going, God, I know you're going to do great things one day. The man at the pool of Siloam is one of the stories, and Jesus comes and says, do you want to walk? And he says, yeah, but the stirring of the water, I can't get in. Everyone gets in before me and gets healed. And it's like he's looking for a time in the future. And Lazarus, who's dead, is another story, the final story, the seventh story, the seventh sign. He's another one where Mary and Martha come. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. And Mary says, yeah, I know one day in the future people will get resurrected. But this man says, and I think this is one of the truths that's hidden in this sign, a clue. He says, you save the best till now, not till last. not till later. But God is doing something now amongst the people. John says, I've written these signs so that you can believe, so that you can have faith. By the way, all these signs need to be mixed with a sense of expectant trust. Because the cross needs faith to actually see what God is doing in his suffering love. It's actually so profound, even the disciples took such a time to understand and unpackage what God was doing. He says, you've saved the best till now. And it says, this is the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. What could that mean to us today, this story? Just want to go through it. They ran out of wine. Ran out of wine. Things run out. I don't know about you, whether you're experiencing things running out. Maybe you are at the place where, you know, nothing's ever run out. And if you are, enjoy it. Enjoy it. It's good. It's a good season. But things run out. I was listening to them making their vows last night. And they were beautiful vows at the wedding. And they were like, I promise I will love you with everything that is in me. And I will never, ever let you go. And, you know, I don't know if anyone else was there. I was like, oh yeah, I remember saying that. Hello? I do love you, Caroline. There you go. But the truth is, some of us here, we said those words and marriages ran out and they failed. Some of us started businesses and we said, God, this is for your glory, and it all fell in a hole. There are people here who, even today, we promised God. We said, we're going to, Lord, in your name, we were at that rally, we were at that place where we were moved and we meant every word, and we said, we're going to change the world for you. And things ran out and we found ourselves broken, we find ourselves disillusioned, we find ourselves cynical. Things run out. Sometimes we start life so strong. I think I'm still a little bit strong, but I'm starting to realize even our physics fail, not physics. I think it still works, but our physics, our energy, our strength runs out. Things run out. And shame comes in and brokenness comes in. And that's what the Jewish people were feeling, but that's what we can feel. In fact, that's what a lot of the world feels. Isn't it amazing to know God sees that? It's amazing to know that when Nathanael was under that tree, God saw him, but he didn't see Jesus. He couldn't recognize him, but God recognized him. God saw him. Then he said, go and take the water. And he got these pots. And I said to you, it's like Jesus is saying, I'm going to do something amongst the old Jewish tradition. I'm going to do something new. It's going to be within that framework, but something new is going to come out of it. I don't know about you, but this morning I was just so excited sitting there, because sometimes confession time, welcome to Sinners Anonymous, but sometimes my religious experience feels like water. It feels insipid. And I know water's good for you, but wine tastes so much better. I drink water because I like it, and I have to survive. But I drink wine. I won't tell you why. But sometimes, man, if we don't if we don't realize that we can actually miss, if we don't realize we can actually, he came to his own and his own couldn't recognize him, then we don't realize sometimes we can be going through the tradition and the form, and maybe we're actually got a water religion when God wants to actually bring a wine, a fullness. And I don't know about you, I don't know where your walk with Jesus is, but if it feels like water today, there's good news. Jesus not only sees you, but he's wanting to breathe new life in that. One of the things that led me to find Jesus was I'd been brought up, is the heater on or is the aircon on? I'm not quite sure, but is anyone else warm? I actually know how to do it, if you want me to have a look at it. It's I think so. Has it got like a flame thing at the top? Because if it does, like, we're in trouble. But, you know, I think I should go longer so that by the time I finish, it'll be cool. No, I don't know. God's doing, I really do believe that, yeah, something, it doesn't have to be the way it is. And what, one of the things that led me to actually first, I guess, discovering who Jesus was the acknowledgement that I'd been in church all my life and I didn't want to go through the motions. I used to raise my hands, I used to sing, I used to do all that stuff. And I came to a point where I said, this feels like just a lovely ritual, but a ritual that there must be more. Anyone else felt like that? We don't want you to come to West City and go through the motions. In fact, if you do come and you've come in feeling cynical and you're just saying, well, I've done my bit today, maybe reassess what it is to follow Jesus. Because later Jesus says in John 10:10, hey, I've come to give you life. And this brings me on to the next thing. Mary knew something and she said, do what he tells you. What would it be like to be a church that did what Jesus told us? See, I think that's one of the keys to recognizing God at work. It's firstly just being open to do what he tells us. You say, well, he hasn't said much lately. I pray, I sit silently, I listen. What does he do? He seems to be listening as well. Okay. I think even John here is saying, you know what? This gospel is a story and it's a message and Jesus has spoken and Jesus is speaking. And so, you know, if you're stuck to say, what is it to do what Jesus tells me? You just read the Gospels and begin to see what Jesus says and just begin to do that. And you know what you'll find? That the Spirit will whisper. Because God hasn't stopped speaking. He continues to speak. And he does it in amazing ways. But often we need the baseline. And that's why I read the bit about grace and truth comes through Jesus Christ. There's something about what Jesus says that helps us understand the Father correctly, but also helps us not to miss who God is, but also even hear him saying, join me. Get involved. Do what he tells you. The guy says, you saved the best till now. Something actually happened that was deeply moving for that group of people, deeply encouraging for the Jewish people, that, hey, the marriage isn't over. God's interested in this world. And he, you know, the picture of Revelations and the wedding between God and his people, it's happening amongst you, you Jewish people, but it's going to spill out to the whole world. And the Gentiles will get in on this. Raise your hand if you're a Gentile. Everyone else is Jews, I think. It's amazing. Love it. See that hand? See that hand? The final thing I think that is just beautiful about this, and it's just a little sign, it's a little clue. John says, it starts by saying, this all happened on the third day. This wedding happened on the third day. And you know, if we've got our ears open, what else happened on the third day? Yeah. John's like, you know, it's that Tony Campolo message. It's Friday, but Sunday is coming. He's saying, don't stop reading at John chapter 2. Don't stop reading at me, chapter 2. Don't. Keep reading. Because on the third day, here's a pointer. Something's coming that literally has changed the world. New creation bursting in. The world ends and a new world begins. But this morning, I really believe God is just wanting to do something today amongst us. And so I'm going to invite John to come. We're going to come around the table. But I'm going to ask him just to wrap up this moment. So John, will you please come? Amen.
I think it's a wonderful and almost a disturbing thing to realize that all the way through John's gospel, they're waiting for the kingdom to be born, and at the end it is. And so when we talk about our lives today, we're living as part of the reality that they were looking forward to the whole time. When you look around, you don't often feel that, I don't think. So maybe this week we can find moments in our lives where we can read these signs and enter into something new, something that brings life. And I don't really know what that is for you, but sometimes it's a person. They just bring life. Sometimes it's a conversation that happens that you weren't expecting. Sometimes it's an act of kindness or generosity that comes towards you. And sometimes it's you that needs to speak life into those around you. We're about to do what we do every week. And it's funny that we're about to, for the next few weeks, talk about signs, moments where God's kingdom is revealed. But we're already participating in that. And every week we come around the table and we proclaim that God's death brings life, and that through tragedy we see hope. And we do it alongside our brothers and sisters, saying that there are no enemies at the table. We are reconciled and we are friends with both God and each other. And I think that's an incredibly challenging but beautiful sign of a world where everything is about life. So if those who are going to distribute communion could come forward, and we're going to say the prayer, the benediction that we say every week. But know that it's a real call. And it's not just a call to come forward and get some bread. It's a call to come forward and participate in God's kingdom, whatever that looks like. So this is a table, not of the church, but of the Lord. And it's been prepared for all those who love God and those who want to love God more. So come, you who have much faith and you who have little, you who come here often and you who come for the first time, you who have tried to follow and you who have failed, come because it is the Lord who invites you, and it is God's will that those who want to meet Jesus will do so here. So when you're ready, why don't you come forward?